May it please the court. James Hardy, attorney number 38173 for the appellant Tyler LePage. I intend to save 3 minutes of my time today for rebuttal. And Judge Taubman, if I slip and say LePage, I made that mistake myself several times, so please excuse that.
Sure.
I'll focus my remarks on issue one in the briefs. This issue concerns the court's error in instructing the jury on the lesser included offense. The record here establishes that the trial court failed to give the jury the verdict form for the lesser included offense. This prejudiced Mr. LePage by depriving him of his right to have the jury consider the lesser included offense in determining its verdict. Because of this error, Mr. LePage requests that this court reverse his conviction and remand the case for a new trial. I'll first address the state of the record, and second, the effect of the error and why it requires reversal here. As to the record, Mr. LePage was charged with second-degree assault while confined or in custody. During the jury instruction conference, he requested two lesser-included offenses, third-degree assault and obstruction of a peace officer. The court denied the third-degree assault instruction, but after much consideration, granted the obstruction of a peace officer lesser-included instruction. The jury was instructed orally and in writing on the obstruction of a peace officer lesser-included offense, and the court did read them the verdict form for that offense. However, if we look in the record, the pleadings file, the obstruction of a peace officer verdict form appears immediately after the only completed verdict form in this case, the second degree assault verdict form, the third degree assault verdict form, the wrong verdict form appears there, where you would expect to find the obstruction of a peace officer form had the jury received the right verdict form. The obstruction of a peace officer form appears in the tendered and refused portion of the pleadings file stapled to the instruction for third-degree assault.
Excuse me, Mr. Hardy. You say it appears in the tendered but refused portion, and I think we're tracking, but there's nothing identifying anything as the tendered and refused. It just happens to be stapled. There's the third-degree assault instruction stapled together with the obstruction verdict form. Is that right?
Yes, Judge Graber.
And I don't think either, I should tell you, as Mr. Crane will hear, I have some real concerns about on this issue myself, but I'm a little worried about the status of the record. I don't think, and correct me please, that there's anything that indicates these are the tendered and refused ones. I don't think there are any markings on them. They just happen to be stapled together. Is that right?
To my recollection, there was not handwriting on the tendered and refused instruction for third degree assault. It's just that this section of the record, or the pleadings file, contains that tendered and refused instruction. I mean, that's indisputed that that instruction was tendered and refused with that verdict form for obstruction of peace officer stapled to it. In terms of the order in which they appear, however, the completed verdict form for second degree assault and then the verdict form for third degree assault appear after in the record after the jury instructions that no one disputes were properly given to the jury here. So I would say that the placement in the record does give us some indication that this is the tendered and refused section, and then these are the instructions and verdict forms that are actually given to the jury.
And there's no record to the contrary of what you say either. I know that Mr. Crane, or I assume that's Mr. Crane over there, argues at some length and with some force that we really don't know. I mean, it could have been just some clerical mistake. I mean, that's his position. I know you disagree with that. I just want to confirm that I don't think there's anything in the record either way. I mean, what you say is that you've got these stapled tendered and refused ones, then you've got the instructions given, which are numbered, then you've got the two verdict forms, one signed and one with nothing on it. That's the state of the record, and there's no discussion or anything else, correct?
That's true. That's okay. Right, Judge Gabriel. That's the state of the record. I mean, there are what I would call sort of some tangential markers that would suggest that the state of the record is correct, that verdict form, the obstruction or the third degree assault verdict form was the one that was given to the jury. For instance, when the court was reading the verdict forms to the jury, it should be noted that there's indication in the record, I think it's page 53 of that day of trial, 11609, I think, that jury did not have the verdict forms to read along with him as he's reading those to him, to them. And the one other indication is, and I'm not sure that this cuts either way, but it appears from the record that it was the prosecution that was compiling the verdict forms for whatever reason that is. I think that we're in Logan County here, so it's a smaller jurisdiction. And there's a point, I think it's page, it's either 53 or 55 of the same day, where the court is telling the prosecutor to go compile those verdict forms and bring them back. So it's not clear that, you know, that where this transfer is taking place. But what Mr. LePage's position is that the record is correct as it stands, is that it's there's no clerical error evidence here, that some evidence to the contrary, what this court typically does is presumes that the record is correct, and Mr. LePage isn't disputing that the record is correct. I know the Attorney General is arguing that there's a clerical error here, but as you pointed out, Judge Gabriel, there's no evidence that would suggest a clerical error. We may have silence here, but that silence in this situation, the presumption would go to where we would normally find the verdict form that went to the jury. At least that would be my contention.
Is it improper to assume that if the jurors saw the material elements of obstruction count, wouldn't they have asked for a verdict form when they see assault in the second degree in a verdict form? And then they're instructed on the lesser included, specifically.
I think I'm following your question, Judge Plank. I believe it is improper to assume that, because I think, but assuming that had the jury, assuming the jury would have spoken out about receiving the wrong verdict form, I think is drawing an interpretation from the jury's silence here that we're not really permitted to make. Does that answer your question?
Mr. Hardy, following up on Judge Plank's question, though, you told us at the outset of your argument that the jurors were properly instructed on the lesser-included offense of obstruction of a peace officer.
True.
So presumably if the jurors had been instructed and they had a written instruction as regarding obstruction of a peace officer, if they were inclined to find the defendant guilty of that offense, isn't it reasonable to assume that they would have noticed that there was an incongruity and asked the bailiff or somebody to or the judge to address that?
Well, again, I think that trying to interpret what the jury's silence means on that question is something we can't delve into. I agree, and I think that your question gets to the crux of the issue. When the jury's been properly instructed on the offense and writing in the jury instructions, what is this effect of having the being given the incorrect verdict form?
If I may interrupt you, if you say we can't delve into it, let me just back up a second and ask you, what is the standard of review for us on this issue?
The standard of review here is the plain error standard.
So if it's the plain error standard, doesn't that require us to, assuming that there was an error, to then assess whether it did make a difference or whether it undermined our confidence in the outcome of the trial?
Yes. The plain error standard requires the court to determine whether the error is obvious and substantial. And the error here is obvious in the sense that Mr. LePage being deprived of an instruction, which is Mr. LePage's position, is a contention, but that this is a matter of first impression, as far as I can tell, in Colorado, the complete omission of the verdict form. And Mr. LePage's contention here, lacking other Colorado law authority, is that the omission of that verdict form is tantamount to a failure to instruct, regardless of the other proper instructions here.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Mr. Hardy. I wonder whether you even have to go that far. Could you not just argue that the lack of a verdict form prevented the jury from entering a verdict on the lesser included offense here, regardless of whether they were instructed properly? They had no mechanism to find him guilty of the lesser and not guilty of the greater charge.
Yes, Judge Gabriel, I agree with that completely. Perhaps I'm just looking at it as my argument is saying that in a different way. But yes, from both a technical and a substantive standpoint, the jury is being prevented here from rendering a verdict on the lesser included offense. And that, getting back to why that's obvious and substantial here, the law is very clear on the point that when the defendant is entitled to that instruction on the lesser included offense, which there's no dispute in this case that he was entitled to it, when he's deprived of it, that's reversible error. Because Colorado follows, and there's some dispute about this in the briefs, but Colorado, I think the law is clear, follows the soft transition approach where the jury considers, or at least may consider, both of the offenses charged, greater offense and lesser included offense, simultaneously. And that is when the prejudice lies here as well. That's why this is a substantial error, because depriving Mr. LePage of having the jury consider both the greater and the lesser included offense in tandem, deprived him of that substantial right. As to some of the Attorney General's other arguments, the question of whether or not the other instructions cure this error in this case, I believe there's a scenario in which a jury instruction could have cured this error, but that scenario is if the error was called to the attention of the court, and the court instructed the jurors to disregard the erroneous verdict form. The other instructions are just, it's sort of like passing ships to a verdict form where you can't, as you pointed out, Judge Gabriel, you can't even technically render a verdict on the offense at which they were instructed in. Again, this is a question of a first impression in Colorado, but I would submit to the court that the error here, the omission of the verdict form, which is the same thing as giving the jury a verdict form for an offense it's not charged with, the omission of the verdict form is an egregious one, and it's one that I think should be distinguished from cases that other panels of this court have decided in the past where the jury receives a verdict form with some erroneous language or a missing word, something to that effect, but is charged with the right offense. Because in that situation, that's your scenario in which the proper elemental and bridging instructions can cure the error, because they go to the point that's missing or misstated in the verdict forms.
Mr. Hardy, you wanted to reserve 3 minutes. You have just under 3 minutes.
I do, and unless the court has other questions at this time, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Mr. Hardy.
May it please the court, my name is Ryan Crane, attorney registration 37842, and I represent the people in this matter. I'm just going to jump right to the people's argument, and I think the court understands them well already. We essentially argue that, number one, there was no error in this case, or at least that the defendant cannot prove error, and second of all, that even if the wrong verdict form was given to the jury, it certainly does not constitute plain error. With regards to establishing error, it's the defendant's burden, not the people's burden, to establish an irregularity or error in the proceedings below. Furthermore, the order of the documents in the appellate record does not constitute evidence to overcome the trial court's reading of the instructions and proper verdict forms below.
Excuse me, Mr. Crane, if I can interrupt you. I think those are two separate issues, so I want to stay with the first before you move on to the second. You say that it's the defendant's burden, and I would agree with you. And I guess I'm not quite sure what else the defendant could have done here. The defendant says, look at the face of the record. Here's these documents are stapled this way. They're rejected. Then you got the instructions. Then you got the verdict forms. The face of the record reveals the jury got the wrong form. I'm not quite sure what else the defendant could do.
Well, I guess our argument is that alone doesn't establish error in the first place. For example, if the rejected verdict form appeared, well, let me phrase it this way. If the verdict form for obstruction said tendered and refused on it, that might establish error, or at least call for correction of a clerical error to determine whether or not, well, did the trial court write tendered and refused by accident afterwards, or did the trial court's clerk do that? But in this case, the mere order of the documents, it's not enough to establish the error that he's trying to argue.
So what else would he have? Testimony from the judge? I gave the wrong form, or what?
If he wanted to delve into what actually happened in the proceedings, besides what's actually in the appellate record, he could file a post-conviction motion and do it that way. He hasn't done that, and so what the court is faced with right now on direct appeal is just the appellate record. And with what the trial court read in the transcript, generally speaking, controls over a trial court's written order, for example. And so with the transcript of the trial court reading the proper instructions and verdict forms to the jury, and nothing more in the appellate record to support this contention other than the where the documents are placed in the record, not even writing so much as tendered and refused, I guess the stapling itself could be considered perhaps evidence, but I don't think that's enough for the defendant to carry his burden of establishing some irregularity in the proceedings below.
Just in last question, I'll bug you with in terms of the record.
Absolutely.
In my memory, is, and I was just curious, and I did take a look at this, on the transcript when the jury returned the verdict, I think the transcript reflects only we find the defendant guilty on count two. There's no reference whatsoever to count three or a form or the judge saying anything like, and we have, they've returned count three and it's not signed by anything. I just want to confirm that I'm right about that. Is that true?
I believe that's correct. I think I remember looking at trying to find that when I was writing the brief, and it would be nice if the court had said, oh, and then I have this blank verdict form for such and such instruction or offense, but we don't have that, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks.
Even assuming that the wrong verdict form was given to the jury, the defendant concedes that this case is subject to plain error review. That, of course, means that even if the error occurred, reversal is still unwarranted unless it casts serious doubt on the reliability of the judgment of conviction. We must assume that the jurors followed the trial court's instructions, absent evidence to the contrary, and we don't have evidence to the contrary in this case. Regardless of whether or not Colorado is a soft or hard transitions instruction state or carrying instruction state, it doesn't change the analysis here, and that's that if the jury was, presumably if the jury followed the carrying instruction and read, if you are not satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of the offense charged, he may, however, be found guilty of a lesser offense. Well, in this case, the jury was satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was guilty of the offense charged. And so it didn't have any reason after reading that instruction to consider even the lesser offense instruction, much less proceed to the lesser offense verdict form and then become confused.
But how do we know that? I mean, the jury has a third, assuming for argument's sake,
sure,
that the wrong verdict form went to the jury. The jury has a lesser included verdict form for third degree assault, which they were not instructed on.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a choice between a charge on which they were instructed and one they have no instruction on, and they say, gee, we have no idea what to do, and they convict of the other. Meanwhile, as at least a technical matter, it doesn't seem like they have any mechanism, unless they themselves ask, where's the other verdict form to convict? And so I have some concern whether we can lay the burden on the jury to ask. But that aside, I mean, how do we know that the jury intended, that there's no question the jury intended to find guilt of the greater charge when they had no verdict form on which to convict on the lesser?
Well, I guess, Judge, if we were to go back and delve into the proceedings and what actually happened and what the jurors did, that's one way that the defendant could establish his argument or establish plain error, but...
but you can't inquire of the jurors under our rules of evidence, so we have to look at just the face of things, I presume, right?
Yes, and so what we have is we have an appellate record that shows jury instructions that we presume the jury followed, and if we're going to speculate on what the jury did, I think the defendant has a far weaker argument to speculate that the 12 jurors got together, looked at the instructions, followed them all, then looked at the verdict forms and decided and saw, well, we don't have an obstruction verdict form. Let's just go ahead and convict him of the other offense, even though we don't think he's guilty. We know the jury could communicate with the court because the jury asked the court to see the video of the defendant headbutting the corrections officers. And so to assume that the jury did that seems to me far below the standard that's needed to establish plain error and cast serious doubt on the reliability of the conviction below.
I'll be asking you too many questions, Mr. Crane, and I'll stand down here in a second, but just out of curiosity, are you aware of any case from any jurisdiction where that's analogous to this one, where the verdict form was not presented to the jury and a court says, you know, that's okay?
I don't, off the top of my head. Assuming that that's actually what happened in this case, I don't know of one.
Okay, thanks. And would you agree? I keep saying I'll stand down. Last question. Maybe I'll ask you. I appreciate that very much. I am aware, as Mr. Hardy said, that there are cases where a verdict form is given to the jury and they have errors in it. And divisions of this court and I think the Supreme Court have said the instructions can be used in that situation to clarify the verdict form and you can find error. Would you agree with me that this, let's assuming that the jury didn't get the lesser verdict form, that this would be distinguishable from those cases, or do you think that those cases apply?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Are you?
Let me try again. There are cases out there, I believe, that where divisions of this court and I think our Supreme Court have said it's no reversible error when a verdict form had errors in it. You know, maybe technically, you know, it may not have asserted the element exactly correctly or something may have been missing, say, but the instruction was right. And the courts have said, and I know courts of other jurisdictions have said, you can read those together. The instruction, in other words, can clarify an incorrect verdict form. My question to you is, do you think those cases apply here, assuming there was no verdict form at all to clarify? Or would you agree that those are distinguishable?
I think I understand the question. I guess to the extent the jury received the proper instructions, I think that does weigh in favor of believing that the jury followed the instructions and knew what it was doing. As far as the verdict forms in this case specifically, I stand by the statement in the answer brief that they really can't be equated with instructions of law at all. I mean, even if they can in some cases where you have things like pattern of abuse and go on and find these extra additional findings when you have interrogatories in the jury instructions, I'm sorry, in the verdict forms. In this case, the verdict forms really were, here's the offense, guilty or not guilty. Here's the other offense, guilty or not guilty. And so I don't think there's anything that we can analogize to cases where there's some sort of incorrect language in the verdict forms.
I appreciate
that
it.
Answers the questions, but
you did. Thank you.
Unless the court has any further questions.
I have one more question, Mr. Crane. In determining whether or not there was plain error, do you think that it's appropriate to consider the likelihood that the jurors would have convicted the defendant of obstruction of a police officer?
The likelihood that they would have, assuming that they received the wrong verdict form?
Right, yes.
I guess I'm not sure how to answer it. I think it is appropriate at least to look and say there wasn't sufficient. The evidence in this case was overwhelming, supporting the offense of which the defendant was convicted. And so I think generally that is weighed when appellate courts look at plain error and whether it occurred.
So to the extent that you could say that there was overwhelming evidence to support the offense of which the defendant was convicted, then wouldn't that make it less likely that the jurors might have convicted the defendant of obstruction of a police officer?
If I understand the question correctly, yes, I guess that would make it less likely that the jury would have convicted of obstruction. Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, I think the court could consider that as well. If the court has no further questions in that case, I will thank the court for its time and ask that the judgment of conviction be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Crane. Mr. Hardy, you have 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
Thank you, Judge Taubman. Judge Taubman, I'd like to address your last question to Mr. Crane, if I may.
Sure.
As far as the evidence here and then the likelihood that the jury would have come back with a conviction on obstruction of a peace officer rather than the second degree assault charge, I think it's important to note that this isn't a sufficiency case. This isn't a situation where Mr. LePage is contending that there wasn't sufficient evidence to convict him of the second degree assault charge. It's going back to the standard set forth in the cases like People v. Stafford, People v. Jones and Pena, that I believe both follow that case, that the question is, and where the prejudice lies, is whether there was a rational basis for the jury, considering potentially at least both of those offenses together, whether there was a rational basis for the jury to acquit of the greater offense and convict on the lesser. And I believe the evidence here certainly supports that. The trial court judge certainly thought so. And the primary evidence, what the jury was looking at, as we can tell from the fact that they asked twice during deliberations to see it, was the video, which the court, of course, can review and you know, tell what you can tell from that based on your own discretion. But I would submit that video is highly inconclusive, and that there's certainly, even just in the video, there's a rational basis under which the jury could have found that this was obstructing a peace officer behavior rather than the second degree assault charge here. As to your question, Judge Gabriel, and I'd like to take the liberty to answer another question that you asked Mr. Crane here. Is there a case in another jurisdiction? I did not find one on this issue where the court submits the wrong verdict form. However, in preparing for oral argument, this isn't cited in the briefs, I did find a case in Texas. It's a 2010 case. It's not on point. It's not the same situation. But it talks about what happened in that case was the jury got a verdict form that was lacking one of the options. It had guilty and not guilty. And what the court discusses in that case is how when you choose, apparently in Texas you don't have to give verdict forms, but if you choose to give verdict forms, when you do that, those become a part of the court's charge to the jury. And the jury is required, the court is required to give the jury every single option that they could conceivably come back on. And I would argue that, well, not on point and outside of jurisdiction, but that reasoning should apply here, where, as you were pointing out, Judge Gabriel, there's no technical way even for the jury to return a verdict on the lesser included offense in this case. And finally, I do disagree about the presumption here, because as I pointed out at the beginning, Mr. LePage is not contending that the record is erroneous in any fashion here. Mr. LePage is simply contending that the record speaks on its face for what occurred. And the cases, Tomeo is one of them, Seacrest 1994, this court, division of this court, say that the burden is on the party complaining of the error in a situation such as that. So I see my time has expired. Unless the court has questions for me, I would simply ask that you reverse and remand to the trial court.
I just would like a clarification, and then I think Judge Plank has a question. You mentioned the Texas case without telling us the name or the citation. Did you want to bring that to our attention specifically?
I can give you that information now, and I'd be happy to supplement with that case after this hearing. The name of the case is Jennings v. State, and it's 302 Southwest 3rd, 306. It's Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, 2010.
And Mr. Crane, let me ask you, would you like an opportunity to respond to that case in writing?
I guess I'd like the chance after reading it to do so.
That's a fair response. Well, then let me suggest this, that we would give you, subject to your approval, till a week from today, till next Monday, to submit a brief response, saying no more than 1,000 words to whatever you'd like to say regarding the applicability of that case. And if you conclude that you don't want to submit anything, if you could just let us know that as well, we would appreciate it. And you could just send a letter double-spaced and directed to the attention of the three judges on the panel. So, Judge Plank, did you have a question?
Yes, Counsel, Mr. Hardy, I'd like you to respond to Mr. Crane's argument relative to, I don't know the number, 12, 13, or 14 instruction that tells the jurors that if they do not find your client guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of second-degree assault, then they may consider obstruction of a peace officer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they found him guilty, doesn't that mean that beyond a reasonable doubt they found all the elements of second degree assault? So how do you respond to that when they wouldn't get to it under the court's instructions, whether there was a verdict form or not.
Judge Clark, I disagree with Mr. Crane's reading of that instruction. I believe that the jury instruction here, the bridging instruction, the one you're referring to, is mirrors the model instruction. And the model instruction is 3806. And that instruction has been litigated in the past. And I believe it's People v. Pachica. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's a division of this court, 1997. And the jury came back with a question about that very language that you're pointing to say, do we read this language to mean unless we acquit him first of the greater offense, we can't even discuss this lesser offense? And the court in that case actually came back and instructed and said, yes, just read the jury instruction. The division of this court found that was error to refer them simply back to that instruction without clarifying, because in Colorado we follow this approach where they can, in fact, consider both of those offenses, the lesser included in the greater, simultaneously. So I hope that answered your question. Judge Palmer, I'm sorry, I just asked, did you want me to submit an affirmative briefing with the case?
I don't think you need to do that, because you've told us orally about that case.
Okay.
And you've given us the citation, so we'll have an opportunity to find it and read it.
Okay.
So thank you for asking. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your thoughtful arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.